There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along this hour. A quick reminder, too, the FM Talk 106.5 app waiting for you at the App Store or Google Play. If you got iPhone or Android phone, go to your specific marketplace, but it's a free app, free download. Just look for FM TALK 1065. You'll see our logo. Download that, and you're going to check out what I think is the digital Swiss Army knife that you've been needing, from streaming to podcast access to our social media feeds to the latest traffic information, latest weather information, show schedules on there. Heck, you can set an alarm on your phone to wake up to Dan and Dalton, or if you really don't get up very early, wake up to the Jeff Poor Show. Or if you're really sleeping in, or you work, work second shift or whatever, Midday Mobile. Listen, they're all on there. Check it out. Brand new FM Talk 106.5 app also gives you the ability to leave us a talk back message or text or call with one button. Check it out. FM Talk 106.5 app available now. All right, and bring on my buddy Cameron Smith. But as I do that, I want to, like, looking through the texts that were coming in here during the news break, and. So this texture says, Sean, keep seeing footage of all the U.S. military equipment left behind. Got to be a huge sum of tax dollars wasted. Total incompetence. Your thoughts. All right. Well, let's do our thoughts. So I'll give you my thought first. Yes. Total incompetence. My buddy Cameron Smith from AL.com, the Triptych Foundation. Total incompetence. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, this is an eminently avoidable situation. I don't see how it's other than incompetence, because if you had intel that said the Taliban is going to take over pretty quickly, and you decided you didn't want to remove that equipment, I don't see another word for it other than incompetence.
And talking to Congressman Carl earlier in the week, he talked about the some number of Blackhawks that were there. And the idea was, you know, some people, I guess, had been bouncing around in Washington. Well, there'll be no benefit because they won't know how to fly them. My foot... They're not going to be able to fly them. You don't think that the Chinese or the Russians or somebody else is going to come in and have, know how to fly a Blackhawk, that they don't have people that know how to fly our equipment? My foot.
Yeah, I think that that's a fair critique, Sean. And I'll take a little bit of a different take, because I think Russia and China, it's not as if they're filling a power vacuum and think these jihadists are great people. I mean, it's actually the opposite. They've learned and said, no, you're a problem for us, too. But if you have a Black Hawk and you want to exert force over people, you're going to figure out how to use it. I mean, you're going to do what it takes to get the information one way or another. And the idea that, well, maybe they don't learn to fly them right away, but they're going to try to find a way to get those bad boys up in the air.
So let me get this straight here. So we've been there for 20 years. When we leave in this pell-mell run for the planes, we're leaving there. Munitions, Black Hawk helicopters, better – that's the military infrastructure. Infrastructure bill – it's infrastructure week for the Taliban, right? Because in 20 years, I know from talking to my friends that were there as contractors – put some pretty good roads in they didn't have, and bridges and lights and infrastructure into Afghanistan, right? In the bigger cities, we went in and put these things in. So the Taliban has to go hang out, you know, at Club Pakistan for a while, or back in the hills. And then they return to power. And not only do they have military equipment, we've given them a facelift for their country. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, we're in a situation where... okay, under the Trump administration, and I'm going to be the first one to jump out there and say, hey, we knew these guys were terrorists. We shouldn't have negotiated them. But they had risen back to, I think it was about half of their number in terms of where they were after we sort of wiped them out initially under the Trump administration. We saw they'd made a comeback. The idea that they were just sort of in caves is inaccurate. Like, they had already made a comeback. So the fact that we were negotiating with them, the idea that we couldn't have foreseen they would take over so quickly seems ridiculous, because we had already seen that they had grown in influence, that they were already poised to be formidable. And yeah, we left stuff behind to the tune of the Afghan security forces were larger in number and equipment and training than many of our NATO allies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how much training and equipment. And the other thing to remember is that the American military went in there, trained these people, and many of those people are saying, no, we're joining the Taliban.
Right.
Now.
Yeah, sure.
So you have trained American military trained members of the Taliban now. Like,
yep.
That's what we're dealing with.
Yes. And this is and this idea that it's this binary choice. And in President Biden's speech, he almost made it seem like, well, I'm doing, you know, people want us out of Afghanistan. This is the only way to do it. That's a false choice, in my opinion. I think there are people that want our men and women to come home from Afghanistan that don't think that this is the way you do it. I mean, I'm not some strategist. I'm not working at the Pentagon. I'm just a hayseed from the Gulf Coast, and I can tell you that's not how you do it.
Right, and I think that's obvious to everyone. And that's the problem is, so, and this is a political tool, right? When you don't like to answer the question, you pivot. And so Biden comes out, addresses the country, and says, I'm not going to spend one more American life in Afghanistan. We wanted to be out of Afghanistan. This is what you want. This is the right decision. To which I say, I actually agree with him, but that's not the problem. This is a bad exit. It is not, you know, they said we plan for every contingency. Well, not apparently the one that's happening now.
Yes.
So there's a lot of issues there that I think people are right to raise the flag. Democrats, Republicans, hey, we're unified on this issue. This is a hot mess that we need some real quick answers on from the administration, because this is embarrassingly bad, even if we agree that we needed to leave Afghanistan.
And the, you know, the human element here that is the most important, getting them out, of course, Americans first, but those people we made promises to in Afghanistan, right? These are people that are now, with the other side note, I've repeated it a couple times on the show over the week, the list of who helped us got to the Taliban, which I want the answer to how that happened, but the list of the people, why it was even in country, but the list of the people that helped us got to the Taliban, they were now summarily, they're not going and saying, y'all are going to have to, you know, pay a fine for that. They are killing those people. They are killing them.
Yeah, and Jake Sullivan tried to say this yesterday. Well, you know, we need to see what the Taliban will be. We need, you know, it's too early to make a judgment
shut up,
of how.
Sullivan.
Exactly. I mean, that was. I was like, are you serious? We've known who these guys were for not just the 20 years we've been involved, but prior to that. Like, they're not new kids on the block. These are, you know, radical fundamentalists who have views that are incongruent with ours. Like, that is absolutely true. And the notion that, oh, well, maybe they will respect civil liberties. Like, are you insane? And, I mean, we know what they are. We know what they care about. It is, you know, a radical Islamic fundamentalism that, hey, you know, it's super cool if you're a dude. It's not so great if you're a woman or, you know, a different faith or, a whole lot of others that are going to be treated very poorly. And they may even say the right things in short term to get some stability. But make no mistake, this is not an unknown quantity in the Taliban. And to act otherwise is ridiculous. And to say things like, well, we're going to send them a strongly worded letter. Like, who are you kidding? And why? When should we stop laughing at you? Because you're embarrassed. You embarrassed the United States. And now you're acting as if we're going to have some really tough talks with these guys who don't care at all.
But they said
about
they
what you have to say.
But they said they would respect women's rights within Sharia, which, by the way, side note, they killed a woman for coming out of her house without a burqa yesterday. But yeah, they said they would respect women's rights.
Yeah, and I mean, really? Like, I mean, and this is where it's, I mean, we're talking abject failure of leadership here. In that, in American leadership, and take away the Democratic thing or the Republican thing right now, the idea that we're sort of taking the Taliban seriously as a good faith actor, I'll fault President Trump for this.
Negotiations.
We should not negotiate with terrorists. We just don't do that. And the idea that, well, okay, and I understand why. It's, well, there's no solution here. The Taliban's too powerful in Afghanistan. They're going to take control. So we might as well kind of negotiate. That is already a failed mindset. And I understand that people can come back and say, well, what do you want to do? How do you want to do this? I respect that, but let's remove ourselves from the country. We know a small American and international force kept these guys at bay. They do not want to fight us. We are way stronger than them. So we could have held them off indefinitely as we moved every last person we'd made a commitment to out of that country. We could have done this in a way. It might take a little longer, but we don't have to necessarily scale up and go wipe the Taliban out again. We just simply say, hey, you know what? We made promises. We honor those promises. We do it in a timely fashion. And to blame the Afghan people or act like this is Trump's fault, no, there's one president in the White House now, and he's the one that's mangling this.
Yeah, it is mangled. I don't know how he thought that this, at any point. I mean, this is a fertile breeding ground for conspiracy, right? Because I think most fair-minded Americans, I'm not even partisan-wise, look at this and go, why would the commander-in-chief make this decision? Now, they're trying to place some of this on the intel community. Intel community's pushing back. I never know who to trust there. But, I mean, how could he sit there and go, yeah, let's go with that plan. I'm going to Camp David. Let's do that one.
Yeah, this is ineptitude. It is tragic. And it is, and I'll tell you, I know the image. Those helicopters leaving Saigon were a image that stuck in the American psyche. And I can tell you, those Air Force planes taking off with bodies dropping off of them are going to be stuck in the American psyche. And, you know, until we make this right, until we say, you know what, we make promises, we keep promises. That's what leadership does. And this sort of milquetoast response where it's like, yeah, we're going to work on this, we're going to see what we can do. It's like, no. You know, we tell the Taliban, hey, I don't care what list you have. If you hurt one person on that list, we will wipe you out again. I mean, I think that's the kind of leadership we need. And I understand what that means. That may mean that folks are put in harm's way. And I understand that. But good grief, we are supposed to be a force for good in the world. We don't have to be the world's police. But man, when we make commitments and we say we're going to treat people a certain way, we better follow through.
And that's what the men with rifles are for. They know that that's their job, you know, to go and to say, well, we're trying to get out. Listen, that's why we have the strongest military in the world, the best fighters in the world. Let them go do that and get things. Because Don's asking the question here, and he said, quick question, Sean, if we still have control over the airport, why don't we maintain control over the airport? We might, you know, as said yesterday, are we looking at like a West Berlin situation? But here's the problem with the airport thing, Don. This is what and Cameron, I want you to react to this. This is where, like, here's a small example of where I think there's no common sense. They said, okay, we control the airport. We're having the people come into the airport to be flown out, the people that are friendly to us. Well, if I'm the Taliban, right, and I've got all my security, they're surrounding the airport entirely. I'm the Taliban. Anybody who's Afghan who is coming to the airport, I know is somebody I want to keep from getting to the airport. How does nobody in Washington say that formula doesn't work? You say, oh, well, if they get to the airport, all the Taliban has to do is surround the airport and say everybody who's an Afghan who's trying to get to the airport, it's our enemy. What's your thought? We'll run the break and come right back. More with Cameron Smith, AL.com, at the Triptych Foundation. If you're coming to the airport and I'm the Taliban, I go, yeah, you with me.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 123 FM Talk 106.5. And back to our conversation with my friend Cameron Smith, AL.com, and the Triptych Foundation. A little behind the scenes, what Cameron and I were doing during the news break, is talk about Bagram Air Base as well. Your thoughts on, what is it, a month and a half ago we surrendered Bagram?
Yeah, I mean, it's been several weeks now, and if we knew we needed to get people out, an air base or an airfield seems like a real useful thing to have operational, and the idea that, no, we're just going to let that one go, and now we're talking about basically a normal airport as our base of operations. I mean, again, we're the United States. The Taliban is a flea on a dog in terms of what they can do versus what we can do. And to tell them, I mean, we could tell them, hey, we're going to reclaim that airfield to get people out. And I understand the argument of, well, there might be violence. Well, there's going to be violence anyway.
There is violence.
I mean,
yeah.
The idea that this is just going to be smooth and everything will be fine. Again, we are the United States. We did not have to do it this way. We knew we needed to get people out. And we should have done it, and we should have used the airport, the airfield. I mean, there's plenty of different options, but we surrendered an airfield, and now we're having to secure a airport that, it's frankly, like you said, now a target. Let's just take the people streaming to that airport and realize they're not going to be super loyal to the Taliban. And guess what? Now they're on a list.
It's a kill spot for them, or a detention spot. I mean, you tell all the people to come to this airport, and then if I'm the Taliban, it's a pretty easy game. All right, Taliban forces people, we're going to encircle the airport. Everybody trying to get in the airport who's an Afghan, grab them. I mean, I don't know how, that doesn't come up at the Pentagon. I mean, they should be so way ahead of me on strategy that thing should have not even made it to the cut, made it to the first discussion.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, the question here is, who actually believed that the Afghan security forces, no matter how prepared they were going to resist?
Stand up? I didn't.
A Taliban that is religiously motivated, who has significant training on their own. Yeah, they may not stand up to the United States, but man, a lot of other fighting forces, particularly their ground game, yeah, they can stand up to that. They can be quite effective. Ask the Russians.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think the issue is, who really believed this? If we believe that these guys were so good, why was Trump negotiating with the Taliban?
Right.
Like, I mean, what in the world, this fiction that apparently the Biden administration and potentially other administrations believed, why did they believe it? And, what impact did that have on the decisions that were made? I understand where we are right now. We can throw shade at Biden all day long, but we've got people we got to get out.
That's right.
And
we've
got to figure out what to do with them.
Yeah, because people ask you, Paul asked, how could Biden lead now? And I think those are important questions to talk about and the damage to the presidency and the politics. But I'm with you. I get the damn Americans out of there, and then get the Afghans that will be slaughtered from helping us, get them out of here. Then we can figure out the rest of the stuff. Because believe me, I want to kick him in the shins so badly I can't stand it, but I want to get our people out. I want to get the people loyal to us out.
Yeah, and I think looking at different options and saying, okay, do we have any options at Bagram? I mean, do we have opportunities to, open up more capacity to get people out? Or is it just, hey, we've got one target in country that everyone's trying to get to, and the Taliban can literally just hang out and say, okay, let's see who's coming. It should be interesting. I mean, I really don't see, and I understand the threat, right? I understand the United States saying, if you so much as shoot one of our people, we are coming after you. But I actually saw a rather hilarious video of a Taliban soldier shooting up into the air, and then one of his comrades coming up and slapping him in the face because they know, right, that the bigger shoe could fall on them if they, hurt American personnel or American citizens. But I mean, good grief, man. You're basically saying, we're going to try to get out, and these guys are sort of chomping at the bit to cinch down control over that country. And we're just sort of saying, okay, And we just don't have to. We literally do not have to. It did not have to be this way. We should get out of the country. But, I mean, man, a nominal, we've seen what even a nominal force can do to hold the Taliban at bay because, frankly, they're cowards when it comes to, hey, we're afraid that Americans will drop things out of the sky.
That's what
heads.
They're afraid of, air support. That's what's been shown. They're afraid of air support. I'm going to get the news break coming up in just a second, so we'll come back after that because a lot more to talk about with you. But quick question here. We leave whenever this is done. Do you think it goes right back to being a training ground for terrorists in Afghanistan? Do you think they we see people on our shores that come from there?
No, I think it ends up being like Berkeley, where they sit around and talk about civil liberties all the time and like peace. And I mean, come on, we know how this is gonna go. We know these guys are zealots. So like, let's deal with reality. The idea that, well, maybe they'll be different. Like, are you kidding me? They don't know how to be different.
Coming right back, more with Cameron Smith right here on the Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, and let me talk about two things before I get back to my conversation with my friend Cameron Smith. Number one, because I see this headline that the House Committee calling for hearings into what's happening now in Afghanistan. I take my words back because I had Congressman Jerry Carl on Monday, and I was saying the same thing. I was like, y'all, and he was agreeing, and I said, y'all got to get this. But actually, he didn't. He said what I'm saying now. He said, we will. He said, let's get to that point first. I mean, you heard Congressman Carl talk about how he felt that one of the translators and one of the Afghan folks that worked with his son, who was in tour in Afghanistan, he felt that's why his son got out of there alive. It was a real emotional moment with the congressman when we were talking about that. I'm for one day us having these hearings, but let's not waste any time on that now, Congress. We'll get that. I'm with you 100%. But right now, we gotta protect those people. We gotta protect our Americans and then the people that we made promises to there. Also, a quick reminder. I was talking to my buddy Trey from 1-800-GOT-JUNK. If you've got a little time now, think about this. Kids are out of the house during the day. It might make it easier to organize some of the junk the kids have accumulated, and maybe you can blame the kids on your junk. If you've got junk and you need it gone, you need 1-800-GOT-JUNK. It could be something big in the backyard or at your shop or office. It could be something that's just tough to get to, or you don't even know where to take it to get rid of it. That's why you use 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Setting the appointment, very easy. Go online to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com or pick up the Sports Illustrated football phone and call them at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They'll work with you to find a day and a window of time that works like an appointment, that thing, and then they show up. It's a real nice feature. And they quote you a price. You show them the job, they'll say, it's going to be this, you know, part of a truckload or that. And then you know the upfront pricing. You say yes, they get to work and get it done and get gone. Use them here at the office and at the house most recently, just a couple weeks ago. 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Big national company, but a buddy of mine doing this in Mobile and Baldwin County for 13 years now. Give Trey and them a call. All right, return to our conversation with Cameron Smith from AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. And, I mean, I want hearings into this. I want to, you know, we're talking about the incompetence there, but I think I'm going to put that in a back pocket for right now. I think we need to pull together as a country and figure out how to live up to our promises and protect our people.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is a fair critique to say, you know what, you know, we should have been out of here way earlier. We should have. And hey, I actually agree. I don't think that this was this indefinite. The idea of having a war for 20 years is bizarre. I don't think we should do that. But whenever we left, we needed to do it in a way that protected the people that we engaged. And we have just, man, this has been a tragedy watching this unfold. And so that's my point is if you go in somewhere, you know, we decided after 9/11 to go in, the Taliban had harbored Al-Qaeda, and we said, you know what? You're going to pay for that. And we made them pay. We wiped them out. We threw them out of power, and we did it pretty quickly. And in the process, we started making commitments to people. We said, no, the way that this was, this, you know, hardline Sunni theocracy that you've dealt with, you don't have to deal with that anymore because we're going to clear this out. You know, yes, they bear some responsibility for maintaining that, but we made promises along the way. And when we do that, It's not saying we should or shouldn't, but when we do that, we got to honor that, even if it creates situations we might not otherwise like. And we've got to figure that out right now.
All right. Before we wrap up, and we'll have to revisit a couple of your different pieces, your opinion pieces over at AL.com. But this one, let's give a little like a taste of this story, because I think people are going to want to read more. A headline here, bipartisanship in the Alabama legislature. It actually happened quietly and effectively. Okay, do tell, Cameron.
Yeah, this was wild. This was several months ago. Danny Garrett called me and said, hey, I got to tell you, we're meeting with black legislators and we're having some of the best conversations we've ever had, Democrats and Republicans, and we're learning a lot. This is great. I said, sweet, let me write about it. And he said, no. And that immediately got, sent up flags for me. I'm like, wait, a politician telling me not to write a good story. And he said, look, we don't want the attention right now. We want to be effective and see if we can help some people and bridge some divides. And the story, it's a two-part story. I mean, it outlines what actually happened months after the fact, because we had Republican and Democratic leaders in Alabama who said, you know what? We want to get to know each other. They had seen the violence and the rioting, over race issues. And, Tracy Estes, Danny Garrett, I mean, I can go down the list. They said, hey, this isn't right, and we want to reach out to our black legislative colleagues and hear them out and just listen. They did that, and the story is incredible.
Yeah, it is. And is there any hope beyond that? We're not going to have everybody agree, but maybe we can get more to the people's business if it's less of the tribalistic fighting, right? It's less of what we see in Afghanistan. Let's get to the people's issues.
Yeah, and I think what you see with this group is where we can find common ground, they work together. Where they don't find common ground, they don't work together. But there's a humanity that was realized between white and black legislators here that was just really powerful, that they said, well, we didn't think it was really that way, or we haven't experienced that. And so to have an honest conversation actually in a church in Montgomery that opened up a lot of doors, I think it can continue, because there's now personal relationships and context there. And it's not talking about the other side. It's talking about somebody who's their friend.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot to that. The more time people spend together, right? And I've thought about that, the difference between online conversations and in-person conversations. Number one, you meet people, firsthand when you're there in person. And also, your decorum, I think, is more. And I think as the more links we get between people, there's people that you're not going to agree with, but you treat them like human beings. They're not just, they're three-dimensional, not two-dimensional. So there's a lot to that.
Yeah, and I think that's, the crossover between that story and the situation in Afghanistan is, I mean, we're humans, right? We may be in different places, different beliefs, but man, there's some commonalities that we need to engage. And I've long said we need to root what we do in empathy, even where we disagree, especially where we disagree. And that's something that we've got to change. And there's some Alabama legislators leading the way on that, and something people should be proud about.
All right. I want folks to check that out. They can go, of course, to AL.com and just search it. Yeah, this is a two-parter as well.
Yeah, it's long, and I'm hoping that they'll be able to do it two-part in print as well. But, I mean, go at D. Cameron Smith on Twitter. It's there. It's on my Facebook page. Please, please, please share it, because it's one of those stories where you hear the good things that are going on as opposed to all the bad.
All right. As always, I appreciate our conversations and look forward to talking to you next week.
Thanks, Sean.
All right, there he is, Cameron Smith joining us. And I want to go, I think there's a live feed coming from the State Department. I want to see Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman is on. Can we go to that? All right, let's go to that feed, see what they're saying at this point.
Desk officers are doing the same. Our support staff are doing the same. As I said, this is an all-hands-on-deck effort, and we aren't going to let up. On the political front, we saw a very strong statement on Monday from the UN Security Council, including China and Russia. They reiterated the need for an inclusive, just, durable, and realistic political settlement that protects human rights, including for women, children, and minorities. President Biden and Prime Minister Boris Johnson agreed yesterday to hold a virtual G7 leaders meeting on Afghanistan next week. And earlier today, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg announced he is convening a virtual meeting of NATO foreign ministers on Friday to discuss our common approach. The United States and the international community have also been extremely clear. We remain committed to combating terrorism in Afghanistan and will not tolerate a government that allows Afghanistan to once again become a safe haven for terrorists. As President Biden said, the United States will maintain a laser focus on our counterterrorism mission in Afghanistan and in other parts of the world. And we will hold the Taliban accountable to the commitments they made in the 2020 agreement and those they have made since, that they will not allow terrorist groups that threaten the United States or its allies to operate on Afghan soil. Before I take your questions, I want to speak to a situation that's very personal to me, facing Afghan women and children. Yesterday, the Taliban held a press conference where they claimed they intend to allow women to work and study, but only within what they called their, quote, frameworks. The United States and the international community will be vigilant in monitoring how any future government in Afghanistan ensures the rights and freedoms that women and girls in that country have come to expect. The United States joined 20 other nations this morning in jointly affirming that commitment. As I said, this is personal for me, as it is for many people here at the State Department and across the federal government. In 1997, I joined then Secretary of State Albright when she visited Afghan women and girls in a refugee camp in Peshawar, Pakistan. Secretary Albright told them, quote, "It is impossible to modernize a nation if half or more of the population is left behind," unquote. That was one of the most searing meetings I have had as a diplomat. I had a teenage daughter at the time. A young teenager told me about watching her sister being raped and thrown out a window. Women who were doctors and teachers and homemakers talked about how they couldn't do and have their lives anymore. That memory will never be wiped from my mind. Societies could not flourish and prosper without the full participation of women and girls back then, and they cannot flourish and prosper without women and girls now. In the last 20 years, Afghan women and girls have embraced their freedom. Millions have gone to school. They have become doctors, lawyers, journalists, parliamentarians, and entrepreneurs. They have built the...
All right, we'll cut away from that for news update. Wendy Sherman speaking. Here's the problem. Some strongly worded messaging from the United States to the Taliban on how they treat women. You think that makes a hill of beans to them? That's over. It's over. Relief, it's over. So we're leaving. Let's get the people that were loyal to us on. And first, get all the Americans out of there. It stinks. But you're not going to...
This is KRG News Taliban. Live Update.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, Tom, welcome back to Midday Mobile. And y'all say hello to my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. And, you know, we often talk about coming in and buying, you know, precious metals and open-L knives and all kind of great jewelry. But y'all also do this appraisal, and I brought my mama in to have something appraised as well. Y'all still doing that for free?
Oh, we certainly are. It's a great way to meet people, look at their collections, talk to them about their stuff, and learn a little bit more about their likes and dislikes, and then at the same time, give them a valuable service. Now they know what their stuff is worth. They know what those items are worth in the current market and whether they want to hang on to them, whether they need to get some insurance to cover those things in case there's another storm or whatever happens, or if they want to go ahead and sell those items, they now have an accurate assessment as to what's going on.
Yeah, and you know, if people that want to sell something, yeah, they could do it right there. And this idea of what things are worth are so important. You've talked about it over time that you follow the family legend of this thing or that thing that's worth X, Y, or Z. It's better to get an independent opinion on that.
I think every family has that uncle or that grandparent that loves to exaggerate and tell stories, and sometimes those stories are pretty exciting. But then, you know, years later, they pass, and now the whole family's up in arms over that rare coin that they just know is out there. And you know, my cousin took it, but nobody can find it now. Well, we dispel all those myths, and hopefully we can get everybody to calm down a little bit, and we'll tell you what the stuff is really worth, not what Grandpa was telling you when he was telling stories, quite frankly.
All right. Let's talk about how to, if somebody has not yet been to the store, tell them how to get there.
Yeah, we're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. Of course, you can check us out online, mobilebaycoins.com, Facebook, Instagram. You can follow us all of those places. You can listen to us every Tuesday night right here on 106.5 with the Two Guys and Some Change show. And if you miss us there, you can go to the Two Guys and Some Change website and catch up on the old podcast.
Great stuff, Angelo. We'll talk soon.
Have a good one, buddy.
Yeah, you too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. A couple programming notes here. So the 6 o'clock this evening over on Facebook, I will be moderating, hosting. I think it's more hosting because it's not a moderator. So hosting town hall, a Facebook town hall that Mobile Bayer and candidate for mayor, Sandy Stimson, has. And so that's going to be on the Stimson campaign Facebook page. I'll be there along with the mayor and y'all's questions. So that goes through their Facebook page. So don't be calling 343-0106. It goes through their Facebook page. But I'll be there with that hosting starting at 6 tonight. So from 6 to 7 over on Facebook. So check that out. Just look for the Stimson campaign Facebook page. And it'll show you how to get your questions asked on there. So I'll talk to you tonight there. Also coming up on tomorrow's show, this will be something that, because we're talking a lot about Afghanistan, so it'll be great to get his perspective as well. Spike Cohen, who ran as the vice presidential candidate in the last cycle for the Libertarian Party, is going to join me in hour number one of tomorrow's show. So Spike Cohen, our guest tomorrow. He is also coming to Alabama next week, challenging the system, how it's set, you know, Democrats and Republicans that make it hard for other parties to get the light of day, get their names on ballots. Those challenges we've talked about in the past. So we'll talk about that with Spike Cohen as well. So that is, the guy that was a VP candidate, is going to join me tomorrow, Midday Mobile, plus my buddy Robert Kennedy Jr. Will join me as well. So that's coming up tomorrow. So the Facebook thing is tonight, 6 o'clock over at the Stimson for Mayor Facebook page, and then tomorrow's show, Spike Cohen and Robert Kennedy and more guests to be named shortly. Get a second here to read a few more of these texts. And by the way, what I was saying on the commentary from the Assistant Secretary of State, like, I'm all on board for those things, but the idea is once we leave Afghanistan, the idea that we're going to be able to chide or coerce them into acting like a Western country, it's not going to happen. You could write a letter to them. Okay. I mean, they don't care. Let's see. Sly Dog says, withdrawal from Afghanistan has been a mess since it was negotiated 18 months ago. Why weren't these Afghan nationals provided visas in the process starting back then? Why did it take Congress to pass an Afghan visa bill just last month? I blame the military and both administrations were not planning better and getting this done in a progressive fashion rather than waiting to the last minute. So I agree with you. I mean, it's the things we're seeing fold out now. And he goes on to say, and yes, I realize the military doesn't issue visas, but they should have been screaming to high hell to start this process 18 months ago. I agree with you. And how this, like, the pullout of a 20-year war, the nation's largest war, shouldn't have been a surprise, Sly, right? We agree on that? It shouldn't be like, oh, okay, this is happening. Somebody else asking about the ambulance situation. People are sending me pictures of ambulances. What I'm doing is giving you the story as reported from the Mobile Fire and Rescue Department that says they are at critical mass level zero alert. This is a quote from MFRD. Spokesman Stephen Milhouse says this is a new code instituted recently to a rise in COVID patients. That as of right now, or when they release this around noon, there were no ambulances or rescue trucks available in the city. Then you heard the story there that there weren't any ICU beds. All the ICU beds were filled in the... I got a question. Maybe we bounce this around tomorrow. I'll bounce this around with Robert, too. Y'all remember when the CARES Act money came and It was all these deadlines. You had to spend it by this point and this point. Remember CARES Act? That was not, this was specifically to deal with COVID. And I said, wouldn't it be something if we didn't have to spend it all at one time and a state could put it in an account that when needed? Because I said, back then, last year, I said, who knows what we're fighting in the future with COVID? Maybe you have that money in the future for this fight to, because you've already allocated it, right, and spent it to get hospital beds or, you know, extended facilities or more ambulances or those kind of things. But that didn't happen. They had to spend it, right? The federal government told the states they had to spend it by a certain time. Point that out. All right. See y'all tomorrow. Bond Bomb is next.